Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to my podcast, Introverted Queen. On today's episode, I am talking to Naila. She loves reading, writing, photography, painting, all solo activities. So she's an introvert at heart. We talked about being introverted in the workplace and also talked about the meaning of social media in 2021. Check it out. Hi, Naila.
Hi, Cindy.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you so much for being my guest on my podcast. It's nice to have you here.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I'm really honored that you invited me. This is the first time that I've participated in a podcast, so
awesome.
I'm really happy with it. Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for being here.
Yay!
So, how has being introverted shaped you in the workplace?
I can say that at work, I've always been the type of person who is on my computer doing my own thing. I don't really need to interact that much with other people. And it's mostly the people who come to me because maybe they see I'm too in my bubble and they wonder who I am or what I'm thinking, what I'm doing. So they usually come to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like welcoming, but I'm not the type who's gonna go like towards people directly myself.
Right.
So and I wasn't the type, or I am not the type who goes very often to the 5 cassette or the group activities. It's not that I don't like people. It's just that to me, that's not like what I want to do on outside of work time. When mm-hmm. it's not my work time, I don't have the need to be with my colleagues when I'm not at work.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
So socializing with my coworkers, I was not really interested in that.
Mm.
So maybe that's a part that did not help me to progress in the corporate world, because I know that sometimes you have to make friends or have deeper relationships with certain people at work to get to certain positions. I am aware of that. I see that. Like, maybe I don't talk a lot or I don't interact a lot, but I observe a lot. I look around. I see what's going on and I take it in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that didn't prevent me from making friends at work, because anyways, you see your colleagues every day. So there are certain people that you connect with no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, people had a tendency to come to me more than I went to them directly or first.
Mm-hmm.
And then from then, I could develop relationships with a few people.
Okay.
So yeah, I would say it like that.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So speaking of work, you worked in Burkina Faso for a while. What was that experience like? And did you feel like it was a life-changing experience?
Yeah, it was life-changing. Not in the way that I thought it would be initially.
Okay.
I thought that I was going there to change something, to bring something there. But I realized that they don't really need us.
Really? Okay.
Yes, they don't really, really need us. You know, they're really capable of doing their own things. They have their own ways of doing things. And our way as Canadian or North American people, we come with our ways of seeing things. And when you get there, you get completely lost. You realize that your baggage that you have, your preconceptions, your education, what you think that you can bring to them is not necessarily what they need from you when you get there. And that was a real shock to me. And I can tell you, I think that I learned more from them than what I could or what I thought that I should have brought to them.
Okay, that's
Yeah.
really interesting.
Yes. Because not only there's a cultural clash when you get there, it's not easy because even though it was like a Francophone speaking country, which is French, like the language that my mother tongue, the first few months, I can say that the first 6 to 8 months, it was like difficult, the communication, because I did not understand the deeper meaning of what they would say to me, and like there was really a lot of miscommunication. So that adapting time was pretty difficult. And the moment I started to feel comfortable was the moment that I had to come back, like just to tell you. So that's why I'm telling you that what I thought that I would bring them was not exactly what I was able to bring to them, okay? And it's not like I didn't do anything. That's not what I'm saying, but they told me that I brought a lot, that I was able to reach the goals that they had. I was able to bring them where they wanted to go. But I think it brought me a lot personally. As a person, it brought me a lot of strength to know that I could go to a foreign country on another continent by myself, move there, stay there, because there was a lot of times that I was like, oh my God, I want to go home. I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm lost. This is so difficult. They don't understand me. I don't understand them. I don't know how I'm contributing to them. But I stuck it out. I stayed and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to figure it out anyways, because it was more a personal challenge for me to stay there and to bring what I could bring to them than to give up because things were getting difficult and like I didn't really understand the environment that I was in. You know what I mean? Yeah. And
Sorry, what did you do there exactly, and how long did you stay?
it was like a year, and I did communications. So anything that was like social media, newsletters, because like when they bring volunteers over there, the different volunteers, they have different teams that they have to work on, like. There's equality between women and men, evaluation of the program, the progressing of the program, or they have different spheres that the volunteers have to go there and they take charge of that sphere. But me, I was the communication person. So every activity that the other volunteers had to do, I was the person who took pictures of the activities, wrote an article, publicized it through social media, through the newsletter. I did business cards, like reports, pamphlets, like, you know, everything that is communications, I was the person in charge of that. So this is why I'm saying that the thing that it brought me the most is on a personal level, more than I went there to help like people who were in need. That was my initial thought. That was what I was going to do over there. But like in communications, I was just doing publicity basically for the program, the Canadian program, what they do, what they were able to realize over there. Not to say, not to take anything away from that, but it's just not what I had in my mind, you know? So On a personal level, the connections that I made with the people over there, that brought me a lot. This is what makes the experience worthwhile. Mm-hmm. It's the people that you meet. It's the connections that you build. Until this day, I still have people from there that I communicate with. And this is this is the best thing ever, you know? And this is it. The fact that I was able to go through that challenge for myself and that I learned a lot of about the people over there, the culture over there, how they think, how they see the world. I met so many people who are so bright, intelligent. I had so many deep conversations with people over there. Mm-hmm. They're all into politics and everything. It was fascinating. And to see the way that they think, that was the best experience. I even decided that, like, when I came back, I was like, oh, my God, I want to do another mandate at some point, maybe to go to another country, to see another country. Because this is the most interesting, to see another culture, how they live, mm-hmm. what they think, how they do things. Just to immerse yourself in a new environment completely, mm-hmm. That's worthwhile. That's an experience of a lifetime. And I think it's good to do that several times, mm-hmm. like not just to travel, but like to stay someplace else.
Yeah.
Like it changes you. It changes how you see things. Mm-hmm. And when you come back here, you see things differently as well. Your problem seems smaller mm-hmm. and I don't know. I could talk a lot about it, but I don't even know if I'm making it clear, but
no, it is.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's a life-changing experience.
Oh, definitely. And that's so amazing that you got the chance to actually go and make a connection with people. That's amazing. I think that's the most important part, like you said. Absolutely.
Yeah. I believe that. I strongly believe that.
Mm-hmm. So 2020 was a year, I mean, with COVID, Black Lives Matter movement, like across the world and in Canada. When that all happened, did it make you think about your experience growing up Black in Canada?
It did to some level. I think that you cannot necessarily compare the experience of a Black person here in Canada and a Black person in the States, at least to what we see in the media. I think as well, what we see are the worst of the worst cases that we see in the media. And my experience here in Canada, there were like events that were difficult and that I know that were related to me being Black, like discrimination, mm-hmm. racism. I did go through that. But what I can say is that it's always a bit more, well, to say in my adult life, it was way more subtle than what you see in the States. When I was younger, like in the, I think it was the 80s or 90s, I think people were more upfront about it.
Yes.
Yeah. So in the 90s, they were more upfront about it. Now it's like, it's very covered, very subtle, very hidden. Mm-hmm. But back then, they were not hiding themselves at all.
True.
And I did live some things that were traumatic, like in my neighborhood, to make us feel that we were not accepted because it was mostly white neighbors, white people in the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and we were the only Black family, and they made us feel not welcome in the beginning. And what's the worst thing is that after that, like, we had our aunt that moved just in the house just beside us, and my cousin, he's like the type of friendly guy, he's friends with everybody. And the family that used to harass us, like, because we were Black and mistreat us and do all types of very shitty things, like disgusting things, well, he became friends with the son of that family. They became like very good friends, very best friends. And then after a while, all the kids, we were playing together and it was all right.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that discrimination is not like something that is internal. It's something that you learn. Those kids,
mm-hmm.
they were against us because their parents were against us.
That's
but
right.
As soon as my cousin made friends with the kid, everything was all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, so the question was, it made me think about that, how I was treated, how we were perceived, and even what my parents went through when they came here and they started working.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, and even though they were qualified, they were highly educated,
right?
In academia, well, they couldn't find anything that was related to their field of study, and they couldn't, like, you know, work in dignity. That's how I would put it. My mom was always told that she was overqualified. She worked at a bank where she was mistreated because of racism as well. So it makes you feel like, it makes me feel sad because I'm like, just because of the color of my skin, I have a disadvantage that will follow me all my life, no matter what I do,
mm-hmm.
no matter how hard I try, even if I like get to the top of what I'm supposed to get to, there's always another level that I won't be able to reach because somebody will decide that they won't give me a chance because of the color of my skin. This is what, like,
yeah.
enrages me, like, makes me sad, it
mm-hmm.
makes me angry, and I don't know. And to see what happened to George Floyd, that he was treated like an animal, he begged for help, he begged to be released, like,
yeah.
to be able to breathe, to be able to be taken care of, because he's still a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would they have treated like a white person the same way?
Right.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so and if I think about 2020, what it has made me realize is that, like, by all this time spent alone, even though, like I said, I'm an introverted person and I like to spend time alone, sometimes I do like to go out, I do like to see people
yeah.
and, you know, socialize
right.
like everybody.
Yeah.
But the fact that even when I want to, I can't, it made me realize even more that just the privilege of being able to do what you want to do
mm-hmm.
when you want to do it is one of the most precious things that you can have in life. To have that agency over yourself
mm-hmm.
like authority over yourself, this is one of the most precious things that you can have. And it made me realize that, okay, I have all this time for myself now, might as well think about what my goals are. How can I redirect my direction, where I want to go, and to focus on that, because I have nothing else that I can do, you know? I'm stuck at home, mm-hmm. so might as well like work on things that I can, on projects that are dear to me and that can bring me something, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And no matter what the outcome is at the end, mm-hmm. just for me, just to do something for me.
Yeah.
This is what I realized that is very important as well.
Mm-hmm. I feel like 2020 was a year of like learning and then unlearning some things, because there was just uh-huh. so much happening and we were inside with no distraction, and we really had time to think about everything that was going on, the way that you were living. You're like, you know what, maybe I should change this. So it was a very eye-opening year, definitely.
Yes. I remember they were talking about the 2020 vision or something. I was like, what is this? This is a stupid slogan. Or like, it was a trend. Everybody was saying it. And I was like, this is stupid. But then I realized, well,
wasn't that
they were seeing clearly. Yeah. It was true.
Very true.
Some people can say that it was the worst year ever. I don't think so. I think it had its bad sides, but it brought a lot of good things as well, because we never used to think to take the time to be introspective, think about our lives. Well, I always do that, but like I did it more in 2020,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I bet most people didn't take the time to do it, but then they had no choice.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
So I love that about that year. And I don't know if I should get into this, but I see that it's like, in part, I love that everybody's so vocal and so not scared of voicing their opinions. But at the same time, I feel like everybody is like always complaining about something. There's always something that that's bothersome or that we have to fight against. And I'm like, why does everything have to be like so polarized? It's either you're on this side and it's good, or you're on this side and it's bad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mostly on social media, I see that it's turning that way.
Yes.
And before, I felt like social media was like just a way of reconnecting with people that are far away or that you haven't talked to for a long time. Mm-hmm. But now it's like all these political debates and all these social issues. I'm not saying that this is not a good thing, but I feel like it's not balanced at all. And it's like too extreme on one side or the other. And it's always conflicted, mm-hmm. or there's always conflict.
Yeah.
One side is against this side. It's never, I'm going to try and listen to what this side is saying. Why do they think like that? Mm-hmm. Okay, me, I think like that, but okay, I can agree on some things and I disagree on others, but no, it's if you believe that, you're bad. If you believe that, you're good. You're on my side, you're good. We're together. Yeah. And it's like, life is not like that.
This
doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it's true. And I feel like, because my next question to you was, how has social media changed your life? And I feel like because we have this platform, we use it, like you said, to fight. But I feel like everybody's so busy sometimes fighting for something that we're actually not listening to one another. So great, something is happening in the news and somebody's, you know, all angry, you know, typing about it, and you're reading it. You're like, okay, But what are the facts? What happened exactly? Sometimes I find that we complain about something, like you said, but we don't have the entire story. We don't have really the background. So everybody's just talking, fighting, and that's it. That's social media.
Exactly. And it's all about like emotions, like strong emotions, and no thinking or critical thinking, analysis. And me, this is what I do. Like, to me, something has, I have to understand something. It has to make sense to me. Otherwise, I'm like, but why? Why is it like this? Why did this happen? Mm-hmm. How? And I have questions like that instead of just being, oh, this is so wrong.
Yeah, exactly. You see?
This is too, like, nothing is completely bad or completely good. It's always...
like there's no middle ground anymore. Yeah,
there's no middle ground, and I think it's exhausting. Sometimes I can spend hours looking on Facebook, and after that, I am drained.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'm not going on that for 2 days because, like, this is exhausting.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And sometimes you wake up in the morning, you're in a good mood, and then you go on Facebook and you see something like that's so frustrating, and then you're mad and it bothers you for the rest of the day, and I'm like, if I didn't go on Facebook,
yeah,
I would have had a great day today, you know?
Yeah. Oh, social media. I tell you. So as an introvert, how do you feel about being on Zoom, like Zoom meetings or Zoom calls with friends or family?
Oh my God. I can tell you that in the beginning, I was so bothered with that. So bothered because I had a job. Can you imagine that job? It's like, oh my God. I had two jobs. Like, they wanted to do team meetings every day. I was so fed up. with this. I was like, how can you do a Zoom call every day? In the beginning, I was like, not putting my camera on. Mm-hmm. So they would talk. I would do other things. And then the boss asked, oh, I'm so tired of seeing dark screens. And I want to see your faces. And so, like, I was like, oh my God, no. So then, camera, then you have to smile and be present, and like, and I was like, oh my God, every day, this is too much. Me as an introvert, I don't even like team meetings every week. So when it was like every day, I was losing my mind. It was too much for me. Mm. And then it's not only work, but then family and friends want to do stuff on Zoom as well because we can't see each other physically. And I was like, no. No, this is way too much. I cannot be on the screen that much interacting with people. I can be like on the screen reading something, watching something, but interacting all the time, I need like my time off interacting, you know?
Yeah.
So it was difficult in the beginning, but then the more we got into lockdown, and then it's barely impossible to see anyone face to face, or like it's not as easy as before. Then now, it's not like I crave it, but I'm less resistant of it when there's a possibility, because I'm like, okay, this is the only way right now that is available or easier to communicate with people. And sometimes you get tired of texting or just talking on the phone. So if you want to see the person, then it's better than texting or talking on the phone, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I get that. So I changed my mind a little bit, but it's not like I'm craving it and I want to do it every day. No, I will never get to that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's bearable now.
Right. Yeah. Well, this was fun, Naila. It was really fun talking with another introvert about everything. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was such a fun conversation I had with Naila, and I hoped you enjoyed it just as much as I did. Tell me your thoughts, comments. I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at introverted_queenblog on Instagram. Until then, take care, and we'll talk soon.